Hello and welcome to the Greg Fearon podcast with your host Greg Fearon. And for the third time, she's done the three-peat. We have Tammy Thomas, the owner,
Hello.
CEO of Live360. And Tammy's going to tell us all about what she's up to and help you understand how you can actually make some progress even when things feel difficult.
When the going gets tough.
The tough gets going.
You know it, like that has been my anthem. But firstly, thank you very much for having me. Thank you for having me for the third time. I really appreciate you and I appreciate being here. And it's an honor to be back three times. I must be doing something all right if I'm back for a third time.
Oh, yeah. You're doing a whole lot of right. So don't worry about that. You're all good. Do you want to just give the audience who've never listened to any of your episodes before, just give them a little bit of an insight into who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thank you so much. So who I am is I'm a joyful lover of life. I am out here committed to thriving, committed to living my best life. And I don't mean my best life where you're running at 100% and you're doing all the things all the time. Like I say to people, and I absolutely mean it, my quest at the moment, my mission in life is to be a well-rested, wealthy woman. I don't know any well-rested women. I know wealthy women. I know women that work really hard, but women who are well-rested and wealthy, I want to be that person. I want to role model that for other people. And in terms, well, from working with you from way back when, I can't even remember when we first started working together. It was 2000 and like teens even. It might even have been, I can't remember, but maybe 2013 or so. I really, really have, I think maybe like working with you was one of the catalysts. I've got a real appreciation and lots of respect for my body, for the human body, and how intelligent it is, and how our body is always trying to support us, even when it's doing stuff we don't like. It's trying to find a way of supporting us. And definitely beginning strength training with you was the beginning of that journey. So that's personal me. I laugh at my own jokes. I've got a 90s musical or cartoon reference for everything. And I like to laugh. I like to find, not like look at the bright side as in toxic positivity, trying to find the positive in everything, because sometimes there isn't. Mm-hmm. But I like to find the silver lining. I like to find some shred of hope, joy, or something from every experience. And in terms of my work, I'm a life coach, but I work in the mindset and embodiment space, coaching women who are values driven, socially conscious. I support them to create work that works for them as well as their clients. Mm-hmm. So I help people create good work in the world, so that they can create a good income, have a good impact, and live a good life. A lot of the women I work with do work that is about changing how people live for the better, changing the world for the better, supporting the planet so that we have a more healthy environment to live in. And because their work, people often confuse it for like a vocation or their calling or their purpose. Sometimes external people, like people look at it and don't put enough value on it. And also because those messages are really pumped, especially towards women, that caring about people and the planet is your vocation, you shouldn't be paid well for it. They often aren't pricing their services in a way that is true and honest and regenerative for them. And they often don't give themselves the credit they deserve. Like they're out here literally doing work that change people's worlds and changes the world, yet they run themselves like a poorly funded charity. And I'm like, you give your soul for your work. You've done so much training and you do so much to be able to deliver your work. You need to put some respect on it and create the money that's going to enable you to live well. So that's what I do. Oh, and let me add a new thing. I'm also an author. I'm writing a book that comes out in March 2024, 5th of March 2024. And the book is called Women Who Work Too Much, Break Free from Toxic Productivity and Find Your Joy. And that book is an exploration of how the environment we live in, the systems we live in, how they create conditions where women work far too much in every sphere of their life. So when we talk about like our growth and our development, we'll often talk about self-limiting beliefs and self-sabotage. And I'm like, do you know what? A lot of what we consider to be self-limiting beliefs and self-sabotage is actually an outcome of systemic oppression. It's actually how the system was designed. And if you can see how the system permeates our ex entire existence, you will give yourself a break and you will understand it's not you doing these things to yourself. You're not making conscious choices. And that knowledge enables you to start to make conscious choices about how you live, love, and work so that you can actually be part of making changes for yourself and also other people. We can, you know, we are individuals that come together to create a collective whole. So you can never do anything that's just for you. It has a ripple effect. The coronavirus showed us that. So if we actually realize a lot of the stuff I say I'm not doing is because you're not meant to do it alone in the first place. So I'm hoping that I'm going to be part of a catalyst for creating a revolution where we start to treat ourselves differently and take off these weird, horrible expectations that are put on us so that we can be authentic and create authentic connections with ourselves and other people.
There was something that you said,
And breathe.
and breathe. Take a deep breath, a nice deep inhale to the belly, through the nose. There you go. Do some qigong out here, people.
Indeed.
You said something really interesting. It made me just think about the differences between prison work and the office environment.
What's the difference?
There isn't really one.
And you know, I would add on to that, you know, for women, it's even more prison-like because quite often, particularly for older millennials, Gen X, boomers, younger millennials, Gen Z, they're, you know, really doing things differently. But particularly us women, we were brought up in the era, you can have it all. But you can have it all meant you can do it all. In the you can have it all era, whilst we have taken up space in the professional world and we've got bigger careers, there are more of us starting businesses, there are more women in higher education than there are men. The infrastructure to be able to support women to do that is not there. So women are having it all on top of doing it all, which is why there's a book. I think the book might even be called The Second Shift, where it was talking about women going to work and doing everything they were doing and coming home to their heterosexual household and then doing everything at home because they were still living the traditional gender stereotypes whilst creating a new gender reality. So when you think about it like that, it is absolutely exhausting.
Everyone's tired.
Dip, like, do you know what we say tired? I would actually say everyone is exhausted. Everyone is on the brink of burnout. We have normalized exhaustion so much. So tired, what we see as tired now is actually exhaustion. And when we say we're exhausted or knackered, we're probably burnt out. But that has been so normalized, and the narrative is we move, we push through, we keep going. So people are not listening to the intelligence of their body. We squash down the intelligence with our body, with the programming of our mind. No wonder autoimmune disease has gone up, allergies have gone up. Issues of inflammation have gone up, and we don't have the energy to live. So we end up spending more money hoping that we're going to buy in things that are going to help us have an appreciation for life, but we can't bloody use the things because we're too tired. Like, I've got friends who have got handbags upon handbags, expensive handbags. And I'm like, where are you going with these handbags? These handbags sit in the boxes in the wardrobes because you're too tired to go anywhere. And you go on holiday and get ill because all of that tiredness and angst you've been holding inside
Out.
comes out to play as soon as you have downtime.
And it's so funny the amount of times I've had conversations with people who are, oh, and I know I need to look after my health, but
But
I know I need to sort my health out, but I know I need to do, but, and I'm like, but what? I think I posted the other day that everyone's so busy shouting about their 5-year business plan. And I'm like, where's your health plan to back up that business, right?
In my book, there's a section where I talk about work ethic. And I basically say that work has become the holy grail because we're so obsessed with work ethic, we don't have the time. We don't even have the inclination because we're not taught. If you think about from the moment you enter school, everything is about work ethic and organizing your life around working more, working more, working more, whether that's working for money, whether that's working in your relationships, whether that's working for the benefit of other people. We don't even think, well, if I've got a strong work ethic, what's the life ethic I need? And we don't even think we work to support how we live. Therefore, our work ethic should be the foundation for our life ethic, sorry, should be the foundation for our work ethic. But instead, everything is organized around work, and we squeeze ourselves into the nooks and crannies around work. And then we get to retirement age, we don't know how to be retired. We don't know how to enjoy. We don't know how to do. We don't even know what we enjoy because everything has been about work.
Well, we're too tired anyway to actually enjoy being retired.
Greg, the amount of times people will say to me, I try meditating, but I fall asleep because you're tired. So maybe prioritize getting good sleep and creating a good sleep hygiene routine before. Meditation is great. There is so much science and evidence around the power of it. But if every time you sit still to do something like that, you're falling asleep, your body is screaming, I need sleep. Give your body the sleep. It's free.
And the body is, it's crazy, right? But is there a thing about the dopamine hit of trying to do something new when we're not doing the basics, like sleeping properly, hydrating properly, moving properly, eating properly?
I think that the dopamine part is the tip of the iceberg. And I think the very bulbous part of the iceberg that's under the water is the conditioning that says sleep after a hard day's work is fine. Rest for the sake of rest is lazy. And in our society, where your worth is proved by the volume, not necessarily the quality, but the volume of what you do. Being seen to be lazy is a threat to your position in your society, community, or whatever. So I think the real massive thing is because of this conditioning about how bad lazy is, it feels unsafe to rest and to prioritize rest. And then the tip of the iceberg that keeps us avoiding how much rest we need is chasing that dopamine high. So when I think about it from a nervous system perspective, so for those of you who are new to me, I trained as a somatic coach. So a lot of my work is informed by the nervous system. A lot of us are operating in survival. So when we're in survival, people often talk about fight or flight. But I think the vast majority of us are in freeze and or shutdown. So when you're in freeze, it's like on the surface you're calm, but on the inside there's lots of anxiety, there's lots of chaos, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do that, and I've got to do the other. But on the surface, it looks like you can cope. It can often manifest as looking like fight or flight. So fight is I'm running towards everything, I'm doing everything, or I run away from things by doing all the time. So it's the same outcome, but it comes from a different perspective. And what I find is that a lot of us are either shut down, so we're depressed, we're suppressed, we're oppressed, or we're in freeze, we're holding all of that anxiety. And then we use fight or flight to yank us out so that we can be productive. And that's where the dopamine comes in, because dopamine jacks us up. The road to creating some kind of harmony is a long road, and for many of us, it's uncharted. We don't know where it's going and where it leads to. Because we're so good quality rest deprived, we need a lot of rest to help us come back into balance, so that instead of using our survival stress of fight or flight to yank us out, we need to do a lot of work to, instead of going boom and bust like what we do, we actually have much more of a rhythmic movement, which is flow. And that, to a system that is used to boom and bust and has quite a lot of control, because with boom and bust and survival, we either fail quickly or we, whereas the other one, it's a lot more of a gentle kind of ebb and flow. It's like a compounding effect that builds over time. The calmness and the peace can feel like a threat because we feel like we don't have a lot of control. So I'm sure you see it in your clients. Busy, 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 haven't got a chance to stop. They get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, they're doing this, they're doing that, they're on the PTA, they do the kids' lunches, they're going to this, they're meeting a friend. If somebody's in trouble, they're the first person to volunteer. They're really knackered, but they come to training because they've made that commitment. They don't want to let you down, they don't want to let themselves down. It's somebody's birthday, they've got to sort it out, they've got too much work on their plate, but somebody's having a baby, they're organizing the baby shower for their colleague. Do, 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 do. And that is a sign that not only have you been programmed for that, you're so programmed for that, it doesn't feel safe for you to pause and consider, what do I really want? How do I want to live? Because if you consider those things, you will be left with some choices. I was going to say two, but I don't know if it's two. So you'll be left with making a conscious choice to know that that's not supporting you, but abandon yourself and what you need and carry on because you don't want to ruffle any feathers. You have the choice to stop, make a change, face some really uncomfortable things about yourself, and also face some uncomfortable things about your environment and how it has benefited from you being that way. And then that leads you to either you're going to take the risk of making changes and know that some relationships and some environments are gonna have to change, or the even bigger one, you're gonna have to leave them behind because they're not in support of your growth. Not because they don't like you, not because whatever, because they're used to you being in a certain way. And because they're not conscious about what's going on, they might reject you. They might say you think you're better than them, you think you're too nice, who do you think you are, all of that kind of stuff. And you're going to have to be really bold to make a decision that's in service of yourself, because when you do that, whilst you do have that period of loneliness and it is terrifying, when you do that, you open up yourself for the relationships that are going to meet you where you are and amplify you. And that is a very big risk, but it is very, very possible. But you've got to take the leap.
The big leap. The big
The
leap.
big
And
leap, yeah.
it's interesting that when I talk to clients about this very thing, and I talk through their diary and what they're doing and stuff, and I say, no, you're not training today. You're going to get some sleep. Panic as if they're letting me down. I'm like, no, listen.
It to you. Do you remember how many times we were training and you would look at me and say, Tamu, let's stop. And I'd be like, oh, let me just see if I can do one more rep. And you can see I just didn't have it in me, because it's that I've got to push through. I can't be seen to be weak. And it wasn't even that I didn't want to be seen to be weak to you. Weak is the wrong word. I didn't want to accept that in that moment I was fragile. Because the idea of me being fragile when I've been programmed to be strong is so terrifying. Because I feel like if I'm fragile, that means anything can happen and I can fall apart. That's not the truth. But that is like, I remember being this in this here living room and you
Right
saying,
there.
Tammy, just stop. And I just felt like if I stop, I might crumble. But the truth was, I would have crumbled if I'd continued because I just didn't have it in me.
You're already crumbling.
Listen, the I felt, like I just thought, how many times are you going to say you feel like the Flintstones car before you realize that ain't a good place to be?
It's not fun, is it? And as you said, we're trying to perform at our very best, especially for women. I was reading the other day where the gender pay gap, it's really interesting about if you're a woman who's white, you're probably going to be paid less anyway. If you're a woman of color, you're going to be paid even less than the woman who's white. But then if you're a woman of color who's obese or considered obese, you're going to be paid even less than everybody else. But yet we're trying to fulfill this big thing and push this wage gap and all the rest of it. We're not even rested enough to be able to do the work anyway in the first place.
Exactly. And you know what's also really interesting about all of that? Absolutely, the wage gap must be closed. But when we slow down and check what's really important to us, what makes us feel like we are alive? What makes us feel like we are living? When do we enjoy ourselves, etc., etc.? You will find that that money you're chasing, sometimes that's not even it. So I remember when in the pandemic, lots of people who were in employment really panicked about furlough. Because whilst they were appreciative that they would be getting paid, they were really worried about what they would do with a salary that was about 20% less. Well, what happened was it wasn't that much of a difference because they didn't have the expenses of going to work. Commuting to work is expensive. All those pret-a-mangers and whatever else, they all add up. They do. And then on top of that, the tax difference leveled it off. And even though people had, not everybody, because some people, I'm not talking about people who socioeconomic level is low and they're just about making ends meet. But for people who are on an average enough salary where they do feel the pinch that the prices are going up, but it doesn't mean that they're having to neglect buying food, etc., those people found that they realized that money, that extra money, did nothing to improve the quality of their lives. In fact, it often was negative in terms of quality of life. So, whilst we absolutely need to tackle the systems of oppression that make gender, race, size, disability gaps prevalent, we also need to check with ourselves, do I really want that? Even during that pandemic time, I was working with somebody who was giving herself merry hell. And one day I said, do you even want to have this business? She didn't want to have the business. All of her friends had a business. A lot of her friends were talking about 10K months and whatever else. So they all started businesses around the time they were having children because they wanted work that was flexible. So they were able to pick up their children from school, etc. But her truth was, she realized she wasn't really cut out to be in business. And I said to her, what are your living costs? If your husband's salary covers most of the stuff in your household, how much money do you need to make? This woman went from giving herself merry hell about launching this program, being a coach, and this, that, and the other. She went and got herself a part-time job in the bakery because she realized that what was more important and what supported her quality of life, her and her family very rarely went abroad. They used to go on camping and caravan holidays. She wanted enough money to be able to not have to ask her husband for money when they were going out, going on their holidays, when they were going out for the day. And on a hot day, ice cream van ice cream isn't cheap these days. If she was picking up her kids and their friends, and the kids' friends, because they were coming round for a play date, she wanted to be able to go to the ice cream van and buy an ice cream for the kids, and not think about how much money she was spending. That's what she wanted. But she had a sense of shame and guilt because her friends were doing something different. So when I was like, yeah, but what about yours? I was like, trust and believe. These women who are doing all of this work to create these however many K months, if they had the opportunity to be able to have a cushy job working part-time so they were more available for their family and they were able to do those things, they would be doing it. A lot of them would be doing it. A lot of them are working the way they are out of necessity, not because they had to. And so it's really important for us to slow down and think, like, what makes me happy? What gives me joy? What gives me a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction? What enables me to maintain a good quality of living? Like, you don't need to, when I think about my friends with their fancy handbags, those fancy handbags they really wanted and they saved for or they earned big money so they could buy are not actually adding to the quality of their lives because they're in the wardrobe because they ain't bloody going anywhere. What is impacting the quality of their lives is having the energy to live the way they want to live.
You just hit a nail on the head. It's funny. So many people come to me for weight loss. When I talk about it, I'm like, well, what's really going on for you? Well, actually, I'm not getting the pictures with my family. I can't run for the bus. Okay, cool. Let's focus on the real stuff. But I think so many women don't actually know what would make them happy.
Because, and this is why I'm saying about like the system of patriarchy doesn't leave room for women to consider what makes them happy. Women, generally speaking, not all of us, but generally speaking, women and people who are socialized as girls are socialized to make other people happy. And we're told that we will get a sense of happiness and fulfillment from that. We don't, which is why you will see people. Like couples, when the woman is the primary carer for the children or the default carer, whatever we're calling it these days, and they organize their whole life around their children, when the children are grown and self-sufficient, the relationship is empty.
They're lost.
The women are lost, the relationship is lost. Because everything has been, the woman's sense of identity has been around what she does for her children and to a lesser or greater degree, what she does for her male partner. So they haven't had the opportunity to cultivate their sense of self, to know what they enjoy, how they want to occupy their time outside of those duties. And they don't know what they want from a relationship, which means the relationship and the life ends up with a lot of resentment and frustration. And then it's easy for women to blame the man. You don't do this, you never do that, you never do the other. And you know what? Men and women, the socialization is that quite often men are very backwards in coming forwards when it comes to emotional labor and domestic labor. And also, because of those conditions, because of the focus, women haven't learnt to acknowledge their needs, never mind state their needs. So it ends up in passive aggressive nagging. So then it becomes an issue about your nagging rather than the real issue, which is I don't feel supported in our relationship. I feel like I do everything in our relationship and then you swan in at the end. Christmas is a classic example. For weeks, you see on social media, you ready for Christmas? Getting ready for Christmas. Da 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 for Christmas. Da da da. Men aren't getting involved in that conversation. Men
Listen.
come and have a nice day on Christmas Day and they fall asleep on the sofa whilst women are doing. If women could say, we love Christmas in our family. We love eating the food. We love the presents, etc. I need us to divide what we're going to be doing because I can't do it all. I end up feeling so exhausted and then I get snappy and you wonder what's wrong with me. Actually, what's wrong with me is that from mid-November, I've been carrying all of this stress about Christmas and you haven't been involved in it and I want your support.
There's two
That's
bits.
so different from saying, you never do this, and I always got to do. It's very different.
I'm gonna add one bit for the men though. I'm just gonna stick up for the men a little bit here, just a little bit. It's so interesting that most men, for example, about Christmas, most of us actually don't give a damn about Christmas.
No, yeah.
We just want to watch Star Wars and Superman on Christmas Day and maybe eat some chicken. I'm not really a turkey fan, right? But it's so interesting just watching even the dynamic on social media where a lot of the women are talking about Christmas. The man has, listen, we don't think about Christmas until you start asking about the tree. And I think for a lot of men, like you say, we don't know, we just don't think like that. We're not that way wired. So you have to tell us.
It's not wiring, it's conditioning.
Yeah. Well,
And
the conditioning has
that is
made
the
the
point
wiring.
there. We
Yeah.
have to like, not only do we have to tell you, men need to be open to listening and not assuming it's nagging or moaning.
Oh yeah, I know
So
that.
it's like there's a wonderful book. The book really rattled me. I was like, why do we have to go through this painstaking drama of having to explain all these things to men? Can't they see? But the book sets out very clearly that because of conditioning, you won't be bothered about Christmas because you've never been conditioned to be bothered about Christmas. So the book is Fair Play by Eve Rodsky, and she talks about ways of dividing emotional and domestic labor in heterosexual relationships so that both men and women are playing an active role, and it doesn't get to the nagging breaking point, which means that everybody is focused on the what we would perceive to be moaning as opposed to the core issues underneath it. But if we circle back to what we were talking about from the beginning of this podcast episode, it requires knowing yourself. It requires slowing down and connecting with yourself. And if you are constantly frazzled and malnourished, and because this is your job, you can be overweight and malnourished because you're not providing your body with the food you need. And I'm not talking about eating celery all day. I'm talking about having the things you like as well as the things you need. If you're not moving your body in the way your body needs to be moved, not the way you want to be moved, in the way your body wants to be moved, you are automatically in a physiological, in a biological state of survival. And contrary to what many of us believe, your biology has a massive impact on your psychology. You can't mindset your way out of survival.
Sorry, I'm just doing the high fives for those of you listening to the audio, because you can't separate the body from the brain.
The brain is inside the body, yo. Like the brain is inside the body,
The
and
brain is biological tissue.
relationship, that internal relationship, your brain is like the motherboard for the mind. So let's call it a body mind because body and brain are together. How your internal environment, which includes your brain, is shaped is what gives the mind meaning. So if your whole internal landscape is, oh, I'm so tired, I want to do this, but Betty down the road expects me to pick up her kids from school and I can't say no. My mum needs to take me to take her to the doctor's appointment. My siblings will never do it, so I need to do that. Oh, I volunteered to make bakes for the bake sale at school. If I let them down, I'll be letting my child down. When you've got all of that going on, the meaning your mind is making is your self-worth depends on what other people think of you. Therefore, you need to keep up appearances so they can dictate your sense of self-worth, which means then you don't have the healthy boundaries you need to have, which means then you don't prioritize the things you need to do for yourself. So you're running on fumes. And when you're doing all of this stuff for people and they are not full of gratitude, and oh my God, you're so nice, you'll do everything for everyone. The moment you don't get that result, you start to resent them. But because you feel bad resenting them, you turn that resentment onto you. So it's, I do all of this, they never do it back for me, I'm fed up of all of this, da 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 da. Why am I like this? I should just not do it. I've got better things to do with my time. All of that is like, we have to be really radically honest. That self, you've created
And then, hey,
that.
can you do this for me? Oh yeah, of course I'll do it.
And then you're WhatsApping your friend. You never believe Jane just asked me to da 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 da. After all the things I did, she still hasn't said thank you for the thing I did, da 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 da, but you're still doing it. but you're still doing it. And it's, you know, some don't get me wrong. Oprah Winfrey refers to it as the d disease to please. I can be a big time people pleaser. And when I hold my boundaries, I've had lots of practice. It still doesn't feel good. I still feel like the worst person in the world. When I'm about to say to somebody, no, or not now, or I can't, I'm still like clenching my butt cheeks and holding my breath because I feel really nervous about it. But I'd rather feel nervous about that than feel like I'm continuously mugging myself off. Like, everybody, I want you to repeat with me, we will not mug ourselves off because people will treat them how you show them they can treat you. If we're not having boundaries with, like, quite often we'll say, blah, blah, blah's not, they're not respecting my boundaries. Nah, fam, you're not respecting your boundaries. If
Amen.
I've said to somebody, don't come to my house because I'm busy work. So I've been writing my book. If my mum just pops round, I'm happy for my mum to just sit here whilst I'm doing what I'm doing. That's my mum. You know, we can sit in silence, all of that. My mum knew when I was writing my book how important that was and how I needed to focus. My mum would not just pop round. She knew she could, but she would check what I was doing. And there have been times where she's been passing the area and she's been like with a relative of mine and she's checked. I'm with Auntie so and so. Can we pop round? And as much as I feel like grot bags saying no, I've said no because I'm really busy doing XYZ. Sometimes I've said no because I need to rest. That's the hardest one. No, because I need to rest. But trust and believe, they know. When they come, they're welcome. I'm the hostess with the mostess because I have replenished myself, because I'm not doing it out of some misguided duty or martyrdom. I'm actually saying no's so that when I say the yes, it's a full, wholehearted yes and people can feel it.
But Tamu, that's so hard to do. It's so difficult to do.
Let me tell you something, Greg. When I first started training with you, there was people like Shirley with her 16 kg kettlebell doing bits and bobs. I wanted to do that as well. But it was too difficult for me to go straight in for the 16 kg kettlebell. So when I first started, I started with the 8. And I built my capacity, I built my strength, then I progressed to the 10, then I progressed to the 12, and so on and so forth. We mustn't go into these things feeling like we've got to achieve mastery straight away. We start. So it's things like a good place to start is things like at work, for example.
I
Somebody asks you for a favor.
a cup of tea. That's the one that I had started with.
That's the one always, a cup of tea, or you're getting up. Can you do something, something? No, I can't. And to make it, you know, when we're first beginning, no, I can't because I'm XYZ. That colleague of yours that always has something they're bursting to tell you, but you're focusing. Sorry, I'm focusing on this piece of work. I want to give myself 90 minutes of pure focus on this. I'll catch up with you after. So you're not like, no, you're not like, oh, you're always disturbing me, blah, blah, blah. You're saying to that person, not right now, my focus is elsewhere. Because a lot of the things, we need to say no to a lot of them is not that we're saying a point blank never ever no. A lot of the time is it's not now.
Yeah, that's
And
fine.
it's also about asking things like when your boss, you know, when you're really good at what you're doing and you can get it done quickly, you get rewarded with more. So it's about being able to, you know, Greg had a visceral reaction to that for those who are listening, but it's about being able to say to your manager, I'm doing this, this, and this, and the time scales are this, this, and this. Is this more urgent than these things, or can it wait until I've done whatever? Because managers love to come and tell you about time management without taking into consideration what you've already got on and what they're adding onto your plate.
They seem to mismanage the list of things they gave you. They don't manage that. It's like, yeah,
They
This is
literally want it off their plate by shoving it over to you so
yep.
they can move on to the next. So it's about having that awareness. In the pandemic, I did some free, my background is social work. So I did some free coaching sessions for social workers. There was a woman who was saying that she literally felt like if one more thing happened, she would explode because she was being scheduled back to back to back appointments because there were lots of people who weren't able to work. Child protection visits still needed to happen during the pandemic. And I said, "Do you understand how you work best?" She looked at me like, like it's Scooby-Doo, like, what? I was like, "Do you understand how you work best?" She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Do you know what breaks you need, for example, in between visits to be able to sustain a good quality of work and not be so depleted that you're going to end up on sick leave yourself?" And she was like, "No." I was like, "Well, think about it. If you think about times when you've been at your optimal, what is it?" So she said, "Do you know what? When I'm going from visit to visit, sometimes I sit in my car, like a little bit further down from the house, so they can't see me through the window for 5 minutes." So I said, "Well, what if you tried experimenting with a 15-minute in the car break?" Social workers smash in the car breaks, like we know that really well. So I used to sit with my windows open if it wasn't raining or something, and I like to listen to something motivational, so I listened to a bit of a podcast. These were in the days before you had unlimited data, so my data was chewed out listening to podcasts and stuff like that. So I'm like, whatever it is you need. So she experimented and she was able to say to her manager, "I need 15 minutes in between each appointment. So that means I need the time to get from one visit to the other and 15 minutes before I go into that visit." Because you can imagine, child protection, you're dealing with a lot of really challenging high emotions quite a lot of the time. And then she said, "I need a proper 45-minute lunch break where all I'm doing is having my lunch, not working simultaneously," because the poor woman was covering visits for many members of her team. What she was going to say to her manager, "It's not fair, da, 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 da." I was like, "You know what? I'm an emotional person. There is a time and place for emotion, but you need to take the emotion out and you need to be going there factually saying to your manager, 'I've experimented and this is how I work best.' If those 15-minute breaks and that 45-minute lunch break means you do one less visit a day, let them make arrangements to get that visit covered by somebody else. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to be." She came back and she had the conversation with her manager. Not only was her manager very supportive, her manager said, "That's a great idea. We're actually going to put this in place." So for the people who were working, who were doing like covering other people's visits, this was a protocol that was put in place to support them at the height of the coronavirus pandemic when we were all terrified that we were going to be gobbled up by corona when we opened our front door. That's what happens when you know yourself. You can advocate for yourself.
Definitely. It just that what you described there just sounds like how the NHS runs. Like
NHS, social care, they're all on education.
goodwill. Goodwill.
Literally, goodwill. Did you know what? I'm going to say it. Goodwill and exploitation. It's an exploitation of people's goodwill. Because even like, sorry, I know we're going all over the place, but I was watching some stuff about the terrible pay doctors get in the NHS. And now the government. If you want to be an NHS doctor that goes and works in America, you have to complete some kind of protocol, and they're changing how you do it. So the relevant body you're assigned to needs to complete some documents. That body is stalling because it doesn't want people to leave the NHS. People don't want to leave the NHS. People who go to work for the NHS believe in the NHS, but they're leaving because they are being treated terribly. Terribly, and they're being paid woefully.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole today.
I know, your NHS background, I'm sure you've got so much that you could say, but yeah, sorry for that swerve. Let's get
No,
back
no,
to the
no,
topic
no.
at hand.
So we did a live the other day because a lot of the things you talked about, people are going to say, oh, that's really difficult. But we did a live on your Instagram, and I'll put the link to it in the show notes
Thank you.
about different and difficult. Do you want to talk us through that?
Yes.
Give us some examples of how that works.
Yes. So I had a experience. So before we came on, Greg and I were talking about training, and I was saying to Greg that in the summer I had so much going on, and there was stuff that I literally just needed to keep up with for that finite period of time. So whilst I'm saying about pushing through and all of that, there are times that we do, for a finite period of time, just need to hold the stare with all we've got going on. And in that time, I was so drained. Strength training felt really hard, and it was taking me ages to recover. So I was just doing yoga and on occasion Pilates. And as part of that, I signed up for a Kundalini yoga meditation 40-day experience. And when we were doing that, Kundalini yoga, you do chanting and this and that. There was some chants we were doing for the first 2 weeks of the challenge, and we were just doing the chants ourselves. The lady who's facilitating it taught us the chants, and we did them together. And then on week two, no, so 2 weeks we did that. The third week, she introduced an audio recording of it, which had music and whatnot. And immediately I just thought, oh, this is different. It's making it difficult. And I wanted to reject the experience, but I caught myself. And in that moment, I realized it's not that the thing was difficult. Is that it was different, and I wasn't used to that difference. As soon as I clocked that I was resisting change rather than resisting the actual thing, it just opened a gateway for me to be present in that experience. And I thought to myself, I don't have to like it, but I can do it. But what actually happened was, once I had let go of my resistance about the change, I really enjoyed it. And then it made me think about how many times I have decided something is difficult when actually it was just different. And as a coach, I just saw so many of the people I've worked with when they have said something is difficult when actually what they were experiencing was change. And when I thought about that, I was able to identify that the times I have really grown, and the grown has been like woof, and the times my clients have really grown is when they were ready to do things differently. They didn't have an expectation that things could stay the same and they could change simultaneously. And it really fed into the fact that growth. There are many parts of growth that are difficult, and there are many parts of growth that are just different. And when we can separate the two, instead of being caught up in, oh, this is so difficult, we can start to seek support for the parts that are difficult, which means that we're not going to be preoccupied with how difficult they are because we are supported, so that we can focus on being open and curious about the things that are different.
Perfect. I think everyone hearing that can probably attain, because one of the things I see a lot on the internet is dieting is hard, tracking my calories is hard, and it's almost setting yourself up for not actually changing.
It's an affirmation.
You just keep going, you keep saying the same thing. And what's the one then for the business owners who'll be listening to this? I don't want to be salesy. I'm like, you got a business, you got to sell.
Let me tell you something, right? When I sell, I get to do the work I am here to do. And there's a difference between sales and manipulation. Sales is literally saying, you said you're struggling with this and you want to get to that. I have created something that is a bridge between where you are and where you want to be. I've got the skills, the experience, the rah, rah, rah to support you. Would you like to buy it? You're not asking people for their money, just plain old give me your money. You're not Oliver Twist begging, please, sir, can I have some more? You are saying to somebody, I have got this thing, this product, this service that can support you with what you already know you need support with. It's here. You can invest in it or you can choose not to. That's all you're saying. Because the money, the selling, is the transaction that takes place that enables both of you to get what you want. You get to, and you know, most of us business owners, and I'm sure the people you're aligned with, because you're like that yourself, no two bones about it. We want to make money. We want to make an amount of money that enables us to live well. And also, we love what we do. We love helping people. We know that what we can do can change people's lives for the better. And we know that when we help people change their lives for the better, the people around them benefit. I can't remember where I got this stat from. I am going to actually look it up. But it was something to do with positive psychology. And it was like something like, if you're a coach trained in positive psychology, the difference you make has a ripple effect that impacts 125 people. So it's not just about you. It's never about you. And if you pay me, like my mastermind that is for business owners, it's £5,555 for the year. But if you show up and you do the work and you're doing what you need to do and you accept my support and you ask me for my support, if I'm working with you, I want you to get results. I'm going to go all out to help you get the results you want. So I'm saying to you, it's going to cost £5,555 to be part of the program. But the aim of the program is for you to create a business where you're bringing in a recurring revenue of at least £5,000 a month. So whilst you might hear, because of the stuff you've got going on inside, I'm asking you for £5,555. No, what I'm saying to you is I want you to invest £5,555, and I want to work with you to 10 times it. I want to work with you to get a return on your investment. When I worked with you, my return on my investment, I walked around and people were like, oh my gosh, Tamu, I can see the difference. I remember when I roller skated with my friend, I was roller skating, she said, Tamu, I can see your thigh muscle, I can see your quads whilst you're skating through your jeans. And I was like, rah, that felt really good. I gained that. I gained the camaraderie and the joy and the positive influence from the women who were training alongside. But moreover, like I got that whilst I was in the experience. I started with you, what, 2013?
Something
I
think
around then. Let's just say 8 to 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I am still benefiting from what I gained from you 8 to 10 years ago. I will continue to benefit from what I gained from you from 8 to 10 years ago. People need to understand this type of work that we do, the coaching, the mentoring, the supporting, the consultation, it's not just for the period of time you're working with us. We are helping you reform your foundation so you're living differently. So if you think about in the UK for women, and you work with women as well, the average age of death is 84. That's average. Some people longer, some people shorter. So I started working with you. I wasn't 40 yet when I started working with you. So let's just say for argument's sake, I started working with you when I was 40. And let's just say I achieved that average and I live till I'm 84. God willing, I would live till I'm way older than that. But let's just say I did. What I gained from you is underpinning and supporting my life for 44 years. When you zoom out and look at it in that context, it's a bloody bargain. So all of you people, especially the people who do work that's about supporting people to live differently, if you don't go out there and sell, you are mugging yourself off. And you are also denying the people that want to work with you the opportunity to work with you and make the changes they want to make. Simple as that. And when I'm selling, I'm not like super salesy. I so believe in what I'm doing. I'm so passionate. I feel like I'm on a campaign. I'm so compelled by it. It's passion. Like when I meet with people for sales calls, I say to them, sometimes I get really excited and they're like, I didn't feel like I was sold to.
Yeah, just have a look. It's just
Because
a
I wasn't
conversation.
selling to them. Buy it or leave it. Like I'm not going to be crying about it.
It's always funny when people go to me, but it's not about the money. I'm like, okay, well,
Oh,
give me
please. When EDF Energy send that bill, it's about the
yeah,
money.
or just give it to me. I'm fine. Just give it to me. If it's not about the
I'm
money,
saying.
pass it, isn't it? It's not about the money. So we talk ourselves into these things, and like you said, these are almost affirmations. And that line about, if you're a business owner, you're a woman who's trying to grow in the world, your wealth ripples out to everybody. Your health ripples out to everybody around you. And if you're charging cheap as chips, no wonder why you're back in this cycle of being burnt out, tired, can't get clients, et cetera, et cetera.
It's depleting and it's damaging and it's just not, it's you know, I can't remember where I heard it, but it was like choose your hard. Either the hard is doing the work in yourself so you can show up for what you want, or the hard is being disgruntled and living a life of survival because you're not going for what you want. Choose your hard.
Mic drop. We'll leave it right there. So, Tammy, where can people find you? I also know that you have a membership that's open for
Yes.
enrollment right now. So, do you want to tell
Yes,
people
yes, yes,
about
yes,
it?
yes. So, yeah, come and find me on Instagram at Live360, LiveThreeXty. I show up there a lot. And yes, I am enrolling for my membership community. We get started on Sunday, the 8th of October, and we properly get started on the 10th of October. It is a 12-month membership, which is a combination of personal and professional training experiences, Q&As, and support, so that you can create a business that has a strong foundation, a business that is peaceful and reliable and has your back, so that you can create the income you want to create, so you can live the life you want to live. It's called the Life and Business Sanctuary, and it's about creating the life you want and creating the work that supports that. It has got already some of the best women on the planet in there. It's a global thing. There are people from different countries joining in. The stuff takes place on Zoom. There's an online library. We're going to have some in-person meetups. Like, I want this to be a global community of ambitious women who want to do beautiful work and live well. In the future, I see myself doing like conferences in another country and stuff like that. So if you want to be around forward-thinking women who are having progressive conversations about what's possible instead of focusing on what's hard, come and join. The founder rate is for this round only. So it is either £47 per month, or if you sign up for an annual subscription, it's £470 for the year. So you end up getting 2 months free. I am going to be sharing like programs within this mass membership, so it's going to be extreme value for money. And the reason I'm doing it is because I want to be part of democratizing wealth creation. I want more people to have access to the tools and the resources they need to flourish. Sometimes we do need to spend big money, and sometimes we can get beautiful resources, powerful experiences in something that isn't going to cost an arm and a leg.
Got it. And apparently you wrote me into helping you with this as well.
Yes, I have. So we're going to have a workshop. We're going to have a masterclass with Greg, which is going to be, well, I said to Greg initially about strength training because I so love strength training. And most of the women who are in my world are between 35 and 55, and it's really important for us to be doing strength training. But I think it will be something like strength training and human flourishing or something along those lines, because
Work it
fundamentally
out.
what you teach is the art of living well.
Yeah. So we're gonna have some fun.
We're going to
So
have some great fun. So come and join us.
yeah,
It's going to
ladies,
be
don't miss
good.
out on this. Don't sleep on it. Get in there ASAP.
ASAP. Yes. Thank you so much, Greg. It's been lovely. I feel pumped. I feel like I
Thank
need to
you.
go lift some weights to release some of this excitement
Okay,
I have
I want to see
inside me
videos then.
now.
If you can do that, I want to see videos. I want to see the form and make sure that it's all good, yeah?
Okay, it's on. It's on. Challenge accepted. Thank you, boss.
I love that you still call me boss. All my old clients from even 19 how long, and they're like, boss. And I'm like,
Listen, we're tigers for life, you're boss for life.
tigers for life. Love it. Ladies, if you've loved this episode, go and follow Tamu. I'm going to put all of the links you mentioned in the show notes and share this podcast with someone who needs to hear it, because I think
Thank
there's
you
a
so
message here
much.
for anybody. And I'll see you on the next episode. Bye for
Thank
now.
you. Take care. Bye.